I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
They think we're lazy.
They think we're weak-willed.
They think we're entitled.
They think we're selfish.
They think we don't care about anybody but ourselves.
We are compassionate.
We are resourceful.
We are capable.
We want to make a difference in the world.
We are underestimated.
Stephen Kraft's case has been a mystery for almost 20 years. Part of this could be attributed to the investigators not sharing very much information. Having new eyes on a case can be crucial for seeing any kind of results. We were very hopeful that we could access the case files, which would answer so many of our unanswered questions.
With this in mind, Mr. Ruff advised us to start filing FOIA requests. None of us knew what it was, so he had to explain it to us. A FOIA request is actually called a Freedom of Information Act request. This act states that you have the right to access public information like records and, in this case, investigative files. You have the right to read, inspect, and copy public information.
Once your request is filed, they then have 5 days to respond. They can either give you the information, tell you you aren't getting any information, or tell you they need an extension of 10 days. At the end of these 10 days, your request will either be granted or denied. This information is occasionally redacted. You also have to pay a FOIA fee if you wish to have the documents. They will tell you what they can give you and the price. Typically, the more information, the more expensive it is.
They also can redact information or take parts out. This is typically done to name social security numbers and addresses. These files can be vital to helping move a case forward. They often contain information that other news articles don't write about or did not have access to. However, if the case is still open, they don't have to send you any information at all. Stephen Kraft's case is referred to as a cold case, but it is still open. This means legally, they don't have to give us any information, but what they do have to do is respond. Filling this FOIA wasn't as hard as it seems like it would be. I just had to find the FOIA request form on the Benton Township website. To do this, I had to download it, fill it out, and email it back to the police department. The exact information is on the website, and all departments are slightly different. Filling the form out also wasn't as hard as I thought it would be. I just needed a short summary of the case and my contact information for them to respond to. When I finally filled it out, I quickly emailed it to the website. Then, I just had to wait. I was so excited to get case files, it felt like I was waiting forever. While waiting, I did as much other research on the case that I could. I checked my email a couple times every day. Our teacher told us that you usually don't get a response until the fifth day, because they put it off, but I desperately wanted case files. 5 business days passed, and I didn't get any response at all. At 7 days, I sent a follow-up email to the same address asking if they received my FOIA request. We waited 5 more days, and still I didn't get a response, not even an email saying they couldn't release information. Just nothing at all. I was basically getting ghosted by a police department. I emailed a 3rd time and then waited, and still, absolutely no response.
We weren't very surprised by this because it is still an open case. However, we were disappointed. They often don't give out information on open cases for a couple of reasons. One of those reasons is false confessions. Someone could read the case and then admit to it, even if it wasn't them that did it. This is not good because the goal is to find who actually did it and punish them. Another reason could be that the case contains information for the families of victims they don't want to be out in the public. A 3rd reason is that the case file could have something that makes someone look more suspicious. If this information is released, people will speculate, and that isn't fair to that person, especially if they didn't actually commit the crime.
Not having access to the case files makes investigating Stephen Kraft's disappearance significantly harder. If we could get access to the files, we could have a direct insight into the details of the case rather than relying on secondhand sources like news articles or rumors. Official police reports could provide timelines of events, witness statements, and leads that were either pursued or dismissed. We would be able to see if there were any persons of interest identified by the police, any evidence that was collected, or any theories the law enforcement explored but neither disclosed to the public.
There could have been surveillance footage logs, forensic reports, or even interviews that never made it into news coverage. If law enforcement had received anonymous tips, we might be able to see the nature of those tips and whether they were ever followed up on. The files could also contain details about the last confirmed sighting of Stephen, including exact timestamps and locations, which would help reconstruct his movements the day he disappeared.
Additionally, there might be details about the areas that were searched, the methods used, and whether anything suspicious was found. One of the most valuable pieces of information could be the list of people interviewed by the police, friends, family members, neighbors, or anyone who may have seen something important. These interviews could provide insight into Stephen's relationships, possible conflicts, anything unusual leading up to his disappearance. If we had access to these files, we could analyze whether any inconsistencies exist in the witness statements, which could open new avenues of investigation.
The files might also reveal any significant evidence that was tested, such as DNA samples, fingerprints, or recovered items, and whether those tests led anywhere. Seeing law enforcement's notes on why the case went cold could also be crucial. Did they run out of leads? Did a key witness refuse to cooperate? Were there jurisdictional issues? If the files contained any potential suspects or even people who were questioned multiple times, that could indicate that someone had information they weren't sharing.
Unfortunately, we are left without access to these records. We are left guessing. We don't have access to the same information/resources that law enforcement does, and we can't confirm or challenge any existing theories. The frustration of being denied this information is immense, because these files could hold the missing puzzle pieces needed to finally find out what happened to Stephen Kraft. Though we did end up receiving incident report logs from that night, that was filed by our teacher. It was rather frustrating that Benton Township didn't send us anything, but sent our teacher the report logs.
While learning about the investigative process, our class had met the FBI profiler, Jim Clementi. He had given insight on how to look through information without getting caught up in the detail. This allowed us all to look at new possibilities for the case. The most important thing he walked us through creating was victimology.
So victimology is the study of the victim, everything you could possibly know about the victim. This is incredibly important. It is the foundation of how we build a profile. And in some cases, it is all the information that we have when we build a profile. So their social media, their relationships, their family, their friends, their education, their work, anything, their experiences, their security awareness, their athleticism, any of these details, their personalities, all those things are going to be incredibly important for that, for the victimology.
This gave us a chance to lay out risk factors and really determine whether Stephen was in great danger. From the process that Jim Clementi had given us, we were able to determine that Stephen was in fact not in great danger with all the risk factors we had gathered. These factors were separated into low, moderate, high, and unknown. Stephen didn't have many high risk factors, so how could this have happened?
This ends up meaning that someone had to do something to a child that wasn't vulnerable to a crime. Someone had to be comfortable enough to do something to a child who wouldn't usually experience these things. To have someone like that in the area wasn't common, so figuring out who could have done this was all the more difficult.
Interviews with family members of missing people are very crucial to bringing them home. Oftentimes, the media can accidentally falsely report. That is if they even interview family members.
We made contact with Jody, Stephen's sister. Eventually, we scheduled an in-person interview with her. We were all so excited to actually get to talk to her face to face. She came to our school with her husband and talked to our whole group during our sixth period. Asia took this class for 2 hours and she was nice enough to stay for seventh period as well, so Asia could continue to interview her. Asia then got tons of good information. We had about 3 pages of notes. We also took a look at Stephen's childhood drawing and learned tons about him as a kid. She remembers him very fondly. From her account, he seemed like a very sweet and caring boy.
We found Special Agent Kobeck, the FBI special agent who took over the case after the other had retired, through the FBI's own podcast, Inside the FBI, where they spoke about Stephen's case.
We were able to learn some new information by listening to their dedicated episode on Stephen Kraft.
Hey, I'm still there?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to take down your information and I'll send that.
We then contacted the Detroit field office and talked with Trisha Kobeck in a brief phone call. Sadly, she couldn't give us any information about the case. Through the podcast, we learned she had gotten close with the family over time and even went to Stephen Sr.'s funeral. The family has continued to work closely with Kobeck and hope to get his case solved someday.
There's one more aspect to this case that needs to be addressed. It was brought to us by Jody during our interview, and it shocked and concerned us all. We all know that Stephen had a lot of friends in the area and would often play at friends' houses. There was a particular family who lived on Holly Street that Stephen would visit quite often. It wasn't out of the norm for him to spend several hours there and play with them. The home was occupied by a couple of younger girls and their mother, who at the time was in a relationship with a man named Michael Leroy Clark. It seemed like the home was a safe place for Stephen to stay.
Back in 2001, there wasn't easy access to a person's background or records like there is now. And maybe if that information had been available back then, it would have changed where Stephen was allowed to spend his time. Michael had a criminal history that included stealing and breaking and entering. He also had charges for reckless driving from a 1988 incident that resulted in 2 men losing their lives. Clark was charged with manslaughter for his involvement and served 2 years for the offense. It's worth noting that not everyone who has a criminal history is a bad person, but some may turn out to be. According to Stephen's sister Jody, about a year after Stephen's disappearance, Michael was allegedly facing more charges for another incident. Since we are unable to confirm this information, we're not comfortable with sharing the details of her allegation. What we can tell you is that on March 7th, 2002, just over a year after Stephen disappeared, Michael Clark passed away. Again, we were given details regarding how Clark died from Jody, but we were unable to confirm. There's a lot of speculation surrounding Michael Clark's possible involvement in Stephen's disappearance, but at the end of the day, that's all it is, speculation.
As far as speculation goes, it doesn't end with Michael Clark. During our interview with Josh Hallmark from the True Crime BS podcast, we asked if he could share who he thought might be involved other than Israel Keyes. Josh was very hesitant to share the other theory that he had heard during his investigation, and for good reason. One of the rumors that has made the rounds over the last 24 years is that Stephen's father, Stephen Sr., could be responsible for Stephen Jr.'s disappearance. And according to Stephen's cousin, Jason Joyner, this theory goes beyond just internet rumors. According to Jason, when he was interviewed by the Michigan State Police, the investigator inquired about Stephen's parents, Steve and Cheryl Kraft.
They had contacted me and asked me the same thing. Do you think that they should start looking into Stephen Shelley? And I was like, absolutely. I don't know why they haven't yet.
Neither Michael Clark or Stephen Kraft Sr. have ever been identified as a suspect by the investigators, at least as far as we know. Their status as suspects appears to be limited to the realm of the internet. These two suspects have been lost in time, and so has Stephen's home. We'll never be able to get statements directly from these sources, but the streets may be able to tell a different story. Right behind Michael Clark's backyard, the place thought to be Stephen's last known location, there was another short street that connected Holly to Red Arrow Highway, Milo Street. Unlike the quiet neighborhood on Holly Avenue, Red Arrow Highway was heavily traveled, and even though only a couple hundred feet separate the two, crossing over from Holly to Red Arrow would have taken Stephen from a quiet, dead-end road where only a small handful of people had access to him, to a busy street with direct access to an interstate that could serve as a quick escape for whoever was responsible for Stephen's disappearance.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started today for as low as $25 at WeightWatchers.com. Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers, watch it work.
So this is our roundtable. Everything that we say is our opinion. It's not necessarily fact. It's not necessarily what we know happened. This is just what we think, our theories, and our feelings throughout this process.
The first thing throughout this was finding the case, of course. What drew you to the case specifically for it?
Mostly that it just did not make sense to me, how he was just gone. And it seems like that should not be possible. I honestly originally thought that him being suspended from school could have played a big part in whatever happened. I'm not so sure I feel the same now, but at the time I wanted to look into that.
It's been a process for the researching and everything because, I mean, news articles are still coming out now. Well, it's re-released information, which is kind of frustrating because when you look into the case and you see, oh, look, something posted 3 months ago, and then it's just information we already know.
Yeah, that's definitely very frustrating. The lack of facts that you can find online is very, very frustrating. However, I do think that there is so much more we can do with this case and so much more to look into. And I really do think Not that it's solvable, but that there is more to the story. It could be solvable, but I just believe there's more than what we know. There's more than what we're being told.
So while we were looking for people to contact, I mean, going through all of the news stories that there were at the time, you know, we found people that might have known something. Because, you know, you say something from the news, you should probably know what you're talking about.
You'd think.
Yeah, you'd think. And then we found the article about like Jody like being the like public head for the case and stuff. And then there was Police Chief Feck in there. And we emailed the emails we can find for him because, well, he wasn't with anybody I could find.
His, like, 20 emails?
Yeah. And we emailed all of them. We got nothing, which makes sense if he's not directly connected to it anymore. But, like, you could at least say something. But he's not obligated to under the law. But the people who are obligated to respond under the law...
did not.
They didn't.
It's wonderful. I love when I spend my time learning how to file a FOIA and then I get ignored. It's happened twice now.
That was like one of the most annoying things about the cases. It's like we would either find people, they wouldn't respond, or if people did respond, they'd be like, sorry, we can't tell you anything.
Which honestly, that's understandable. There's always going to be confidential parts of a case. We're not entitled to know everything. But a response, I feel, is necessary. I feel is legally necessary, is it not?
Yeah. So I emailed something that wasn't even like legally necessary. So I was asking for like a list of staff for the Benton Township Police Department during 2001. I called them and they were like, oh, you email this clerk here. I email her with the email they gave me. Nothing. Not even a, oh, I'm sorry, I can't do that for you, or I'll get back to you in a little while. Just nothing.
I understand that there's a lot going on for them, but at the same time, this is something that needs to be done as well.
When you have so many, well, like, eyes on something, like, multiple people trying to figure out what happened, multiple people wanting to, like, go somewhere with it. Like, I understand they're not responding, but when people are expecting things of you to help solve this very important case, I'd say missing person is very important.
Incredibly important.
Yeah. And then you just coming up with no response whatsoever. It feels kind of like they don't care that much.
It's very cold. It's very blowing it off. Very, might I say, heartless. It seems a bit heartless. Like,
yeah, you have people who are trying to figure things out, help, and then you just don't respond to anything. Like, emails to anywhere in your department. We filed FOIAs with them. We've emailed staff, we were told to email, and there was nothing. Thankfully, family did respond. We did get responses from family.
Yes, I really do think that is what saved us for finding any kind of information at all. Jody gave us tons of great information. She came into our school's library to do an interview with us.
And then later on, we invited Jason in for an interview as well. So family is really important to cases. I feel like a lot of people try to just focus on, oh, here's law enforcement. We focus on the law enforcement. We go down the path of law enforcement, and that's the only way to get there. But there's families behind.
The family was very important for getting a victimology done on Stephen and just knowing more about him in general and some more exactly how the night went down.
And victimologies. That's another interview. Interviews were very important to us since, you know, in other cases, the FOIAs might be more important than interviews or anything, but we weren't allowed to have any information given to us through FOIAs. So figuring out how to do things through interviews, like the interview we did with Jim Clementi when he taught us how to do the victimology.
I found that interview to be so helpful. And also, like, I'm a huge Criminal Minds fan. And I was like, I was geeked. I was freaking out. I was so excited.
He was very thought out with what he said. Everything made sense.
He's so intelligent. It's incredible.
But he answered questions very well, provided good examples. It was a really insightful interview. Another interview we had with our third J name, with Josh Hallmark, that helped a lot because we were put down the path of Israel Keys some point because Stephen was a part of the Namus 45 as someone being in the United States who still wasn't identified or found. I mean, he was a part of it because he was involved in a search on Keys' computer. But then he came in for an interview and he was able to tell us a lot that maybe diverted our focus away from Israel Keys because he told us that they were no longer looking into him. So
instead, they were looking into Stephen's own father. And that blew all of our minds, all of us, like, shocking moment when we figured that out. Like, it had completely changed our perspective on the case, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Of course, we still don't know why, but knowing that there
is a reason or something.
And I think maybe our interview with our episode 4 interview that's going to come out might give a lot more perspective into the family life and how it possibly could have turned violent.
And, you know, with family, we all want to show our family in the best light we can. So, like, understanding that people want to represent their family as best as they can. Like, even though it's not, like, as serious as a missing person, anytime my family does anything, I try to give them the benefit of the doubt. They didn't mean it, or that's not how they usually are, when I could be completely wrong, and I just have the family connection in mind that that's how I should view them. And that's not a bad thing. Loving your family isn't a bad thing. But sometimes it can get in the way.
I do definitely agree with that, though. People do try to protect their family. And there's, especially in our country, a lot of stigma around, like, your family's name. And your family is who you are. So people don't want to paint their close family in a bad light in any way.
Yeah, my family, it's so, like, we'll be like, oh, this last name did this. Of course, it's a part of this last name.
Yes, yes. Like, you got the same last name as someone cooked immediately.
Yeah. They'll be like, oh, yeah, this last name is always known for doing that. Family is a big thing when you're trying to figure things out, getting interviews. And even if things do change because of the dynamic, it's expected. And you can't get mad at anybody for doing that.
And every family has a different dynamic. Much like Mike Clark, he was living down the street from Steven with his girlfriend at the time and their two kids. And Steven, you know,
he's a kid. He wants to go play with other kids. And what was so surprising about that was just, like, I haven't heard of this man from anywhere, actually.
No, Jody brought him up and we were just like, how is this not everywhere? This is such a connection.
Yeah. And of course, we only know what happened through word of mouth. So, and she was explicitly told what she was told, what she can tell us and such.
We found the article. Was there an article about him?
There was an article about his death and then the car crash he caused. Yeah, supposedly he... I mean, and increasingly now, parents are doing, like, quick searches on the people their children go see most of the time. But dealing with family affairs with something as serious as the allegations against him, that's... if a kid gets involved in that, that's... adults have...
A horrifying outcome could occur.
Adults have control issues, you know, or just they think that they're above people. So when you suddenly involve somebody who is a child and you feel like you're above them, you feel like you have agency to do whatever you want. And that could include harming the child.
It's horrifying to think about, truly.
If I remember, because, like, I was, like, really on this because I thought Michael had done something, because if I remember from an interview with the that was something else. Allegedly, I can't remember where I read this from, but Steven had wanted to tell his mother something, like, really important, he was, like, adamant about it, but he hadn't ended up telling her about it.
Yeah, I think it was
something something to do with Michael.
Steven spoke to his mom a lot about having to talk to his dad sometime, but he never had the chance to, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I thought that, like, when we found out about Michael, I was like, what if that was something about Michael? What if he knew?
Which is very possible, especially considering typically you see that with that sort of situation where...
Mm-hmm. It's so, because he was, like, right down the street there. We mentioned Milo Street, which was the street that led to their house that connected to the highway. So that could have had a part in it. Or just even if Milo Street was, like, not a part of Michael's situation, it could have been just something that was unfortunately there.
Steven definitely lived in a not dangerous, but, like, concerning area, like, excluding all the drug and alcohol use and stuff like that. He lived by a highway and the road that they lived on, people would constantly use to get to that highway. So literally anybody was driving around there and could see the kids.
Geographically isn't a very good place. I don't think it would be described as a quiet neighborhood by any means.
Adults are supposed to be responsible. And when you have two of the most, like, out of left field suspects being an adult who is supposed to be responsible and then an adult who's supposed to be responsible for Steven directly, his father, that just, it's weird.
Concerning.
Because, like, you'd hope that you're, like, even if, like, remove yourself from Stephen's parents. Like, if you hope your children are safe. From what we've heard recently, we don't know if all of that care was exactly there for him.
Very debated. We've got two very opposing points of view.
Extremely opposing.
Which, episode 4 is going to be interesting. That's all I can say. I'm really excited for it. All right, thank you guys so much for listening. Underestimated Stephen Craft was researched, written, and produced by Asia, Lexi, Destiny, Bailey, and Layla. Intro music by Haley. All other music by Shane Yoder. Our show artwork was created by Chelsea, and our series artwork was created by Bailey. The Underestimated podcast is a production created in the Brandywine Community Schools Broadcasting CTE program. We want to thank you for listening, and a huge thank you to our community sponsors for supporting us and helping us fund our work. Please make sure to leave us a review on your favorite podcast player, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Underestimated.
The new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at weightwatchers.com.